Welcome to Econoday's Economists Roundtable. I am joined by Jeremy Hawkins and Mark Pender. Jeremy covers the UK and the continent, while Mark monitors the US. I am Ann Picker, Econoday's Chief Economist. Our weekly conversations generally revolve around what has happened in the past week and what will be happening going forward. Jeremy, I guess you have the big news of the week. Why don't you begin? With the Brexit
thanks, Anne. Well, as you say, there's been quite a lot going on in Europe over the last week or so, and I suppose from an investor viewpoint, none of it's been particularly savoury. Most of the focus then has been on the UK Brexit story, so I'll start there, not just because it's dominating financial markets at home, but because ultimately it's not just a UK issue. So Prime Minister Cameron then duly got the best deal he pretty well could expect really from last week's EU summit. And the referendum date has been confirmed as the 23rd of June, as largely expected. However, within his own party, anti-EU feeling has probably proved a bit stronger than anticipated. And if you believe some of the stories doing the rounds at the moment, it seems as if as many as half of his party could actually still vote to want to leave the European Union. Fortunately for him, that all the main opposition parties over here want us to stay in. So although politically it's going to be probably extremely messy over coming weeks and months, this needn't really be a problem. In fact, since everyone only has one vote, what Parliament decides needs not matter anyway. It's going to be down to the public. Well, that doesn't clear things up that much, as the polls are really still too close to make any confident call about how the referendum's going to go. The latest poll, which is the only real one we've had since the EU summit took place, showed the in vote going down a percentage point to 42%, the out vote rising a percentage point to 40%, and the unknown still significantly high at 18%. Now, all that, of course, makes for an extremely uncertain and hence investor-unfriendly outlook for the UK. There is, I suppose, a very real sense here now that leaving the EU would be a step into the unknown, and not least just because it's completely unclear at this stage what the UK's future relationship with the rest of Europe would look like. Given that the pound slumped yesterday and we saw the best part of a seven-year low versus the dollar is hardly surprising. Now, I said at the start that it's not just a UK issue. I think one thing to bear in mind here, and indeed from the kind of movements we've seen in the foreign exchange markets over the last few days, it's a European issue as well. Bear in mind that the UK is the second largest economy in the European Union. The other EU members at the back end of last week voted to keep the UK in simply because they realised that it would be a much weaker place without it. Excuse me. In other words, it's not just a case that negative opinion polls over here will impact the pound and UK markets, which they certainly will, but they could also be a negative as far as the euro is concerned as well. And I think it's no real surprise that we've seen euro-dollar, euro-yen and euro-swissy all lose ground over the course of the last few days. And that's despite what generally disappointing numbers out of the US, out of Japan and the ongoing risks that we could see the Swiss National Bank intervening again in euro-swiss. So it really is the case that it's not just the Brexit influence in sterling, it's influencing a lot of the European crosses as well. One last point on Brexit before everyone nods off is that if we were to vote to leave under the Lisbon treaties, it means that the negotiations for withdrawal could take up to 2 years, by which time, if there's no agreement, effectively the UK would be out anyway. In terms of the economics, well, I've been saying it's been a case of more of the same for several weeks now, and sadly it still is. We had the flash February PMIs out yesterday. That suggested that all of the Eurozone is slowing down. Indeed, the composite index saw a 13-month low. Manufacturing is particularly weak. We've seen orders growth decelerating for three straight months now. Output prices posted their steepest negative annual rate in a year. Flash consumer confidence is at its lowest level since December 2014. And it's not just the PMIs, because we have a German IFO survey out this morning. That saw its lowest level since December 2014. And worryingly, expectations, which the markets really concentrate upon, saw their sharpest decline since August 2011. The French ANSI survey out today showed a similar sort of story. So it really is a very disappointing picture as far as European recovery prospects are concerned at the moment. This week, that picture's like to be reinforced by the economic sentiment survey from the EU Commission on Friday. That's probably going to see another decline. It's also like to see a further downward revision in expectations for inflation. And that, of course, is going to weigh heavily on market expectations for what the ECB is going to do on the 10th of March. And just quickly on the ECB, if I round off with them, one point of note to come out of the minutes from their January meeting, these released last Thursday, as it was a suggestion that it might be possible to allow inflation, that is once we actually start to get some inflation in the Eurozone, to spend some time above the 2% target level. This would help to make up for what's going to be a period of, what, 3, 4, or even 5 years of sub-target growth of consumer prices. Now, that's a long way in the future if we're going to get there, but were that sort of policy change to come through, it would really suggest that the ECB is targeting the level of prices rather than the change in the price level. That was something which getting on towards that process would be a potentially big negative as far as the bond market's concerned. So not a great picture over here.
Well, speaking of inflation, Mark, you, I think, want to talk about U.S. inflation, which has appeared.
It has suddenly, mysteriously made a very strong appearance in the consumer price report. We're moving forward on the year-on-year rate, 2.2%. Services are at 2.5%, holding up commodities, but it was the breadth of the strength that was most impressive. And it really justifies, you know, what the Fed had been looking for in inflation, even though the bulk of the economic data remained pretty soft. And, you know, there's still questions on whether or not the Fed will be raising rates at all. So it was a difficult outlook right now. Sudden appearance of inflation, this is, however, is not being justified by other inflation readings that we're getting from regional reports, including those today from the Richmond Fed, which is much like the Philly Fed, and other reports pointing to decreasing price pressures right now. Even though we also had an inflation expectations reading in today's consumer price report, which is also ticking lower. So the CPI isn't really being confirmed right now, but it is very interesting that this is what their original outlook was, and it's being confirmed right now. Whether that can be sustained, we don't know. We have employment report, and if that shows strength, if it shows anything around 200,000, I think a March FOMC rate hike will be in the play again. Even though it's only 10% right now, it could go up. So I think that's pretty much the story from the U.S. side. It's not as quite as gloomy as Jeremy's side, and we'll still have to see. And then we have financial stress in the global markets. We have quite a bit, and not even mention now the election, and that could be playing a larger role in consumer confidence, which did tick lower in today's report. And it's a little bit of a mystery why, but it could be that we're having an election, you know, we're having unlikely groups. We have the, you know, Trump coming in, and that is a question mark on the economic outlook. And we also have Bernie Sanders on the other side, although he's fading. We have like two outside groups, not really middle politics, and yet you see in the economic analysis that most outlooks are still pointing to a moderate outcome for the election, though I'm not sure that that is now being really priced in, now that we're seeing the kind of strength that is appearing on the Trump side. It could be a wild card, certainly, for consumer confidence, investor confidence. I don't want to keep going on and on, but we also had an investor confidence report out today where Europe really collapsed, and it's not exactly clear why, but it could be the Brexit. Anyway, the U.S. is still hanging in there, and I'll pass it on to Ann now. Sorry.
Okay. It's been a quiet week, relatively speaking, in Asia and the Pacific. This might be called the calm before the storm, namely the end of the week when Japan issues its monthly data deluge. In case you missed it, though, vaults have become all the rage in Japan since the introduction of negative interest rates. Meanwhile, investors continue to monitor the People's Bank of China's daily currency fixing for the yuan. For example, today the PBOC lowered its value to the US dollar, and the markets did not take kindly to it. We talk a lot about China and Japan, so I thought perhaps we might talk about Australia today. Australia, unlike the other developed economies, did not have a recession, nor did its banks have problems the others had in 2008 and the following years. However, what the economy has had to deal with and is still struggling with is a rebalancing of its economy away from mining and commodities to other industries. Despite the global recession, Australia has not contracted since the first half of 1991, which is quite remarkable. Fourth quarter GDP will not be released until next week. Canada and Australia are the two latest countries that release GDP data. Third quarter GDP, however, was up 2.5% when compared with the same quarter a year ago. But we have more up-to-date employment data, which shows that employment jumped in both October and November, but eased off in December and January with slight declines. For the three latest months, employment was up over 69,000, even as the unemployment rate increased from 5.8 to 6% in January. The Australian dollar is considered a commodity currency. Yet the RBA, Reserve Bank of Australia, has had success in talking the currency down from $1.06 to the US dollar in August 2012 to the current exchange rate of about 71 cents to the US dollar. And this, I should note, has occurred without resorting to negative interest rates. The current RBA cash rate is 2%. But the headwinds from China remain and continue, given that that is Australia's main export market. Anything else to add? Well, thank you all for this week and to be continued next week.